The United Nations Climate Change Conference in Paris is over, but what does it mean? And where do faith-driven climate activists go from here? For a look at all of that, I'm happy to be able to welcome Claire Markham, Outreach Manager for Faith and Progressive Policy at the Center for American Progress. Claire, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
There's been a lot of news coverage of the climate change accord that came out of the Paris gathering with different interpretations depending on who's doing the reporting. What would you say are the most noteworthy parts of that agreement?
I would say, you know, this is the summation of decades of hard work by activists and politicians alike. The bottoms-up approach, which a lot of people have been remarking upon, is incredibly important. It relieves a lot of political pressure. It amps up accountability among nations to do what's right for them and their people while maintaining kind of a global solidarity network. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a huge part of potential success. I would say another notable piece is how hopeful the agreement is. Just making an agreement, just agreeing to transparency, all of those efforts are really going to help increase the odds for success here. And, of course, I would be remiss not to mention the incredible impact of faith communities on the outcome here, certainly in the ramp-up to the climate talks, but also in Paris as a part of the discussion, and certainly carrying it forward is going to be really in the hands of faith communities.
Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of activity on the environment. The Pope issued his encyclical, faith groups left and right have been organizing around climate change. So it would be helpful to talk a little bit more about that, if you will.
Faith communities have really been a part of the efforts to do something about climate change, help mitigate its impact on marginalized communities, and certainly help save our planet and future generations from complete destruction. And what I think is really interesting is the multi-faith efforts leading up to kind of this culminating agreement were really effective at taking what was once seen as a very wonky, overly scientific issue of climate change and making it feel resonant with people. It made it feel immediate. It made it feel like a moral problem and a values question as opposed to just a scientific question. So I think that faith communities are responsible for helping people see that climate is a question they need to answer. I think leading up to Paris, Pope Francis certainly brought the global spotlight back to the work that multi-faith efforts have put into acting on climate change. As you mentioned, the encyclical was a game changer heading into Paris. The Pope said in as many words that he was publishing this in time to have an effect on the climate talks. And I think we've seen clearly that it did. Jewish, Islamic, Buddhist, Hindu leaders all issued their own statements in solidarity with Pope Francis. And multi-faith activists have been working ahead of Paris to keep attention on politicians. And they were present in Paris when the talks were taking place. We have faith in climate change was a common refrain under which they worked. And I think their impact is notable.
Yeah. And it's interesting how it feels like there's been relatively little public celebration on the part of Democratic politicians around this agreement. I mean, it's a big step forward for the progressive agenda and for the president.
Yeah, you know, prophetic vision transcends political party. And so I think it's important to emphasize how the Paris Agreement and certainly the multi-faith efforts around Paris know no one political party. It's also worth noting that this is just the beginning. We have a lot of time to meditate on what the U.S. in particular is going to contribute. We have a lot of time to hash out the ways in which the U.S. is going to contribute to the wider success of the global community's efforts on this issue. I think you're going to see a lot of progressive politicians coming out strongly on it. I think you're seeing a lot of folks celebrating collaborative efforts. And what I think faith communities can really do to set an example here is demonstrate hopefulness and optimism, where politicians might be wary of how much work there is to do and how much relies on voluntary contributions with this effort. Faith communities know that the improbable is achievable if you work really hard and you have justice and truth on your side. So I think faith communities are going to be responsible for fighting political apathy, for fighting the chance to let this fall out of the national dialogue, mm-hmm. and for pushing politicians, progressive and conservative alike, to comment on this.
Mm-hmm. Clara, I have to inquire about your thoughts related to people who simply refuse to acknowledge climate change, global warming. Is this real, or is it just political, or is it a moral blind spot, or is it denial, or what is it? And it's not a perfunctory question. I'm really trying to understand any opposition to this.
Absolutely. It's a question I wrestle with a great deal as well. I think, you know, there's global scientific consensus on this issue. As far as I and many others are concerned, the issue is settled. And those folks who continue to deny seem to me to be in one of two camps. They're either blinded by their political interests, they're funded by groups who work on extractives or other things that could be impacted by decarbonizing, or there are folks who are blinded by ideology, people who have been poorly educated on this issue, people who feel an affinity to those very politicians who are blinded by interest and trust their word above the scientific community. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's our responsibility to both fight back with facts and with truth on this issue. We have the scientific community's consensus. Many, many people of good faith agree that we should trust that and move forward. But even if we can't get folks to agree on the science, we can get many climate change deniers to agree on common good. This is about safe communities. It's about thriving communities. It's about a responsibility to care for the least among us. And if I can't get someone to agree with me on the facts, I can usually get them to agree that we don't want to see native communities being swallowed up by the ocean. We don't want to see the communities who are least able to prepare for the impact of weather events and the least equipped to recover from them. We don't want to see them languish. So I'm confident that we'll win hearts and minds with the science, but in the meantime, we don't need to.
The frustrating thing about that, Claire, is that the people who deny all of this say, well, there's not a problem. All of that stuff about the water rising and them being overcome with floods, that's just a bunch of theory. You know, ordinarily, you would say if you appeal to people's basic spirituality, or within the Hebrew tradition or the Christian tradition or even the Muslim tradition, if you appeal to the scriptures that are authoritative for those religions, you would think that exegeting those and applying the principles that are involved would help change minds. My question is whether or not that really would work as a strategy for these people who seem to be blinded to the situation.
Stories like the scriptural narratives you just mentioned, but also personal stories, resonate more deeply with people than statistics or numbers often do. And so we can both call on the scriptures in our traditions and use those in prayer, use those in study and in community. But we can also lift up and amplify the stories and experiences of folks who are already being affected by climate change. And we don't have to go to the Marshall Islands for that. You know, you can obviously talk to folks who lived through Katrina. You can talk to folks in New Jersey about the recovery after the hurricane there so recently. I mean, these are our neighbors. They are our brothers and sisters. And their stories can help, I think, bring to life what the real tangible impact of climate change is going to be. And and I think that those stories can help transform people's hearts and minds as well.
What's next needed? What are the next steps in assuring that the promise of the accord on climate change is not abandoned but makes it go forward? What are those needs?
It's a great question. The first thing everyone needs to do is read their country's pledge, right? All of the countries in Paris outlined intended nationally determined contributions or pledges to say what they were going to do on this issue. The bottoms-up approach is what's going to help make this so successful. It also makes this a tangible, achievable activity for activists. You can work in your own country. You can work with neighbors and friends at the local level. You can call your state legislators. You can call governors. You can get involved at the congressional level in the U.S. for sure. Know what the U.S. is pledging. Those pledges are going to be renewed every 5 years. So that's an achievable window for us to work in. Let's make sure that we are committing dollars to this issue. Developed nations really need to work very hard to pay for the impact of climate change in countries that are suffering the most but are least responsible. And we also need to make sure that when those 5 years come up, our politicians have made promises and delivered on them. So I think that the next 5 years are a critical window of implementation. So activists need to read the U.S.'s pledge, and they need to hold politicians accountable to the promises we've made for that window.
That's really a great statement. I'd like for you to say just a word about why Center for American Progress is working on this issue and what Center for American Progress itself is doing with communities of faith.
You know, Center for American Progress is working on climate change because it is the defining moral challenge of our time. It is going to cause increasing levels of extreme poverty and death. It's going to affect global health and national security. There is no element of human life that will remain untouched by the impact of climate change. And Center for American Progress is committed to working on the issues that are most relevant in people's lives and coming up with progressive solutions to problems that impact folks. And so this is a no-brainer for us. Mm-hmm. It's also, I think, importantly, an interdisciplinary issue for us. So our poverty team, our energy team, and our faith team, among other groups, have been working really hard to come up with intersectional questions and answers that can help address the most pressing pressure points of climate change, but also a long-term solution. So, you know, how can we help low-income communities prepare better for the immediate impact of climate change? And how in the long term can we make those communities more resilient? How can we assist displaced communities? And certainly, of course, what is the role of faith communities in making those policy solutions a reality? And so we work in a multi-faith effort here in Washington, D.C. to advocate for the best progressive solutions to these questions. And I think that you'll see after Paris, when people have unpacked and they are no longer jet-lagged, the multi-faith community in D.C. is getting to work. And you'll see a lot of tangible impact from that, I'm confident.
Claire Markham is Outreach Manager for Faith and Progressive Policy at the Center for American Progress. Prior to joining American Progress, she worked as the field associate and minimum wage lobbyist for our friends at Network. Claire, I thank you so much for being with us today. You're always welcome here on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.